let's just take a snapshot of that, because that is the reality of thought leadership now. It's not about title. It's not about experience. It's not about, you know, your qualifications. It's about attention. And, you know, attention is the new currency of leadership. If you have attention, you can create influence and lead people. If you don't have attention, you're invisible.
This is the Leadership Communication Show, a podcast to help people like you be the inspiring and influential leaders their people need. I'm Michael Paperno, and I'm a communication expert, teacher, and coach. My personal mission is to help good leaders be great leaders through the power of communication. I promise you'll learn something from each guest on this show that will help you along your personal leadership journey. Okay, on with the show. Today's conversation is with Graham Brown, founder of the award-winning podcast agency, Pickle & Co. Graham's a published author on the subject of the digital transformation of communication. His work has been featured in the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal, and he's helped shape the communication strategies of some of the world's leading organizations. He's a passionate storyteller who specializes in helping global corporations and government agencies find their voice with podcasts. And as you likely know, podcasting is one of the best ways to demonstrate thought leadership, which is something Graham knows inside and out. That's why I asked him to join me today. Welcome to the show, Graham.
Michael, a real pleasure. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Well, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it, and my listeners appreciate it too. Let's start by helping my audience get to know you a little bit better. Tell us a little bit about your background. What's your story? How'd you get to where you are today?
Yeah, thanks. Well, funnily enough, I graduated with an AI degree in 1995, which is a bit of a loaded statement because 1995, as you know, was a long time ago to be doing AI, but that was what it was back then. It was sort of a very different world to what AI is today. I mean, you know, ChatGPT is right at the top of people's talking points now, especially in our industry, you know, how it affects creatives, content, PR, communications, everything, healthcare as well. But back then, I was just very much fascinated about modeling human intelligence. We're talking about modeling human intelligence in on 4 megabyte computers, right? We're not talking about what we've got now. Like with ChatGPT, there's 170 billion parameters on it, apparently.
Amazing.
So a very different world. I graduated with AI degree. I remember walking into the careers library, as they were called back then in my university, and saying that I had graduated with an AI degree, expecting to be thrown into these amazing jobs. But 95, the lady said to me, you know, what is AI? And I sort of struggled to explain it. And then I remember she just presented this list to me on this sort of vinyl photocopied sheet. And she pointed at it and said, there, that's the job for you. And it said, teach English in Japan. So that's kind of how I got my start. And it's funny, Michael, because actually I found out the only qualification I needed to teach English was that I could speak English. But for me, it was a ticket. It was a passport. And really, that's how I got into, you know, my future calling, if you like, which was communication and storytelling. I mean, I've always been a storyteller, but I didn't realize later on in life you could actually get paid for telling stories. But that's, I kind of fell into that through the world, obviously starting out teaching, you know, communicating, then getting into the world of mobile telecommunications in the late 90s, which was an amazing journey, a ride. And then later in my career, you know, moving into a different kind of communications, which is podcasting. So, you know, not in a straight line, I'm sure your listeners can appreciate that what makes a story interesting is it never is a straight line. So there's lots of twists and turns in it, but it's always been about communication and how we as human beings interact with one another.
It's never a straight line. That's something I talk to my clients about a lot, especially clients who are thinking about a career change or a pivot or something. You know, there's this, it's not the way, I mean, I personally, for me, it never was linear, but it's definitely not linear for folks these days. It's funny to hear that you started in teaching, because I started as a teacher, graduating in 1995 as well. And those were the days, everybody, where you used to have to get jobs through looking in the newspaper. They weren't.
What's a newspaper, Michael?
I know. Oh, definitely more analog than it is today, but I digress on that. But yeah, the teaching is such a good boot camp.
for learning to manage people, learning to tell stories, learning to communicate with people in different ways, in different styles. Because, you know, I always tell people, five times a day, I had to perform and teach and educate and keep 28 people in each of those classes engaged. Yeah. And that's that's not easy stuff. So I have, high regard for teachers. But yeah, my career was, then teaching, marketing, brand agency, designing, then back to teaching on the university level, coaching. So it's just like, you look at my LinkedIn profile and it's like, whoa, how does this guy?
But there's a through story there, right? It's all about communication, isn't it? And performing. Like that performing part of teaching, I think people underestimate. Because teaching, we've all experienced it as consumers of teaching, right?
Mm.
But you actually, when you stand up on stage, you are on stage in front of people, you are vulnerable, especially with kids as well. It's tough out there, brutal. If you're teaching teenagers, there's no love lost on teachers now. Also that whole, the emotional energy of teaching is quite draining, right? Being on stage and like not being able to hide. You can't sort of teach and then just go and hide in the corner. Mm-hmm. You've always there in everybody looking at you, everybody wanting a piece of you. So even like taking that taking it into the world of marketing and branding, there's so many similarities. If you can communicate, it's all about communicating, isn't it? And that skill that you learn through teaching.
That's my thread, is that I've always been from day one a teacher of communication. Whether it's been to the high school students that I taught or to the salespeople that I supported in financial services marketing, all the way through to all the clients that I helped build their brands. Mm. It was all about communicating and engaging your audience. So, and pivot right over to that's what leadership is about. And just like being up there in front of the classroom, you as a leader, you can't hide. You're always on. Mm. So tell me about how the podcasting thing started for you. How did you actually get into that?
Well, Michael, like yourself, a very messy journey, but with a purpose, which we only discover later on. It's kind of like, they say, I think it was the philosopher Søren Kierkegaard, that Danish philosopher, that said, we have to live life forward, but understand it backwards. Mm. And when you sort of get to a certain age, you have this vantage point where you can see and reflect a little bit on your journey. For me, I never left university and it's like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I wasn't like the guy that studied aeronautics and then went and designed planes and then, started my own sort of like aeroplane company. Out of the gates, it was all very messy. My sort of introduction to podcasting was in 2012. So if you go back a little bit, in 1998, I had a telecommunications business. I sold research to telcos about how young people were using mobile phones. Mm. Now, 1998, young people mobile phones was not a thing, I guarantee, because I knocked on the doors at every single mobile phone company, cell companies, handset manufacturers, telcos, and said, I've seen the future and it's teenagers and mobile phones, right?
Mm.
And they all said to me, we don't do kids. And it was
funny.
Utter dejection in 98. I said, no, wait, I've seen, I've lived in Japan. I've seen Japanese high school girls texting, sharing, taking photos, all of that. And I thought, that's the future. And they all basically said no. But fortunately, it came round. It was like a Tiny Tim sort of episode, like right before Christmas. We were about to give up the business. And then we got a call from some body we didn't know, and they said, we've seen your report, we love it, we're not a mobile phone company, but it's all about our customers. And I said, great, I need the money, just buy it. And it was MTV. It was 1998, MTV, they became our best customer, and like that just was the surge of interest in mobile phones, MTV, then all the ad agencies followed, as you can imagine, they all kind of they're out there looking for their clients. Then all the mobile phone companies. Anyway, fast forward to 2012, we sold that business. I had enough. It run its life cycle, and so had the industry. And then with my wife and my son, who was six at the time, we decided we didn't want to start another business like a lot of people do. So we thought we'd sell everything and put everything in three suitcases and travel the world.
Wow. Yeah,
so we traveled the world for 6 years. 5 years, actually, five and a bit. And, lived all over the place, living out of suitcases. And it got to a point, Michael, yes, living on a tropical island is great for Instagram. But actually, if you're an entrepreneur, or if you like this, it gets kind of lonely. So in 2014, I started my first podcast, you know, long before the days of Spotify and all the tools that we have now. And really, it was because I was lonely. And I was living on a subtropical island off the west coast of Africa. And, you know, the internet connection was about 3 meg per second. And it was, you know, you weren't surrounded by this kind of community you have of, you know, podcasters or entrepreneurs. But I started this podcast to reach out to people and say, you know, tell me about your life. You know, you're traveling the world, you're a digital nomad and so on. So I started that podcast and that became my odyssey. I found it not as a way to create content, but to connect with people. And fast forward a little bit more, that became a business.
That's awesome. So you kind of, I love that you, the reason for starting it was for yourself, for loneliness and to forge connections with other folks. And tell us about how you see thought leaders using podcasts and even other mediums. I mean, I know podcast is your business, but a lot of times, well, first of all, let's talk about what a thought leader, how do you define thought leadership? So I'll throw that over to you because it's one of those buzzwords that's all over the place and there's a lot of different ways to do it, but tell me how you see it.
Yeah, this is a really interesting discussion, Michael, about what is thought leadership. And I think it's most relevant if you are at a stage in your career, let's say you've got 15, 20 years of experience. For you, you're probably leading teams, departments, even whole organizations. And you need to bring people together. You need to influence people. You need to create change, transformation, culture, all of these challenges that which you never really had before. And so you need thought leadership to do that and to make change. And the interesting thing, Michael, is that for that generation, so really we're talking everybody on the wrong side of 40 who are sort of at the peak, they're peaking in their career, especially in corporates. They didn't grow up with TikTok. But the challenge now for them is that it's not about them getting onto TikTok and doing a dance to become a thought leader. It's about them understanding the economics of TikTok and attention. And that's affecting them, right? Is that they don't need to get on TikTok, but they need to understand the attention economics that make TikTok possible and how it's affecting everything. You look at the data now, I mean, you know, it's often said that the attention span of a goldfish is 9 seconds. Well, the latest data shows the attention span of human beings is 8.5.
I saw that. Yeah,
it's just like, it makes you wonder. It's like, what's happening to us? I think if you look, you know, the average person unlocks their phones 110 times a day. You know, you're talking to somebody and they're sort of, So they're sort of looking at their phone. So like, attention and thought leadership are very intertwined. And I think you only have to look at, for example, like only go back a few years, Greta Thunberg, the Swedish teenager who, you know, really garnered attention around climate change. And it took a teenager to stand up and talk about it. And there was a spat between her and Donald Trump on Twitter. And actually, you know, credit to Greta, she's actually pretty good at handling that. But it was just interesting for a moment. A teenager was taking on the most powerful person in the world and winning, you know, that thought leadership battle. And I just thought, let's just take a snapshot of that because that is the reality of thought leadership now. It's not about title. It's not about experience. It's not about, you know, your qualifications. It's about attention. And, you know, attention is the new currency of leadership. If you have attention, you can create influence and lead people. If you don't have attention, you're invisible. So to answer your question, a short version of that answer would be thought leadership is attention. You don't need any kind of letters on your resume to qualify yourself as a thought leader. If you have people's attention, you are a leader by default. Now, how are you going to use it? So that's what we have to get into our heads, is that now we're in that game of attention. And obviously, we don't want to do the dad dance on TikTok. What are the alternatives? How do you build thought leadership now? Because without it, you won't be able to create any kind of change.
So how does then someone who is in that sweet spot of, you know, have the experience or basically has something to say that they think deserves attention and or that they have something to offer. I'm even thinking about, you know, what the work I do to promote myself. And I publish blogs, I have a newsletter, I post things on LinkedIn regularly. And sometimes I sit there and think to myself, obviously I'm good at what I do. I have clients and I have a business that's doing well. But then sometimes I sit there, it's like, do I really have something to say about all this? And who's gonna listen to me?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people in leadership positions are good at what they do and who they do it for, but then don't necessarily always look at themselves as a thought leader or someone who is deserving of that attention. So if someone's out there feeling like that, or maybe they've been trying to get attention and you just very clearly showed that the value of attention is skyrocketing right now, so it's harder and harder to do, what would you say to someone who wants to, who thinks they deserve that attention or want to be a thought leader and are having trouble actually breaking through?
Yeah. You're touching on a very interesting part of thought leadership, which is about the imposter syndrome, which is that it's interesting, isn't it? That the people who probably have the most to offer, those with the most experience, the connections, and importantly, a really good understanding of the problem. You know, if you've been in corporate for 10, 15, 20 years, you know what's broken. So when you drop out and do your thing or you're creating change, you understand the problem and the language like nobody else. The problem is you've got the most to lose because of your reputation, because of your position. Whereas that 18-year-old has nothing to lose on TikTok, right? So the imposter syndrome is probably the biggest challenge. And that is like, who am I? Who's going to listen to my story? Who'd little old me telling my story? I'm not an Elon Musk. What have I got to offer here, right? But here's the interesting thing, Michael, is that, you know, if somebody says, oh, you know, Michael, no, Michael who? Leadership Communication Show. Oh, yeah. Like, I listen to that. Or, you know, I see it on my feed, right? He's that guy doing that thing, right? Now, if you think about that guy doing that thing becomes a very valuable piece of real estate in the mind and the consciousness of your audience, right? That thing. What are you that thing for? How do I know, remember you, right? So you may not think, for example, that you have a lot to offer or you have an amazing story, but if people see you as a thing or in that box, even a small box, that makes you a thought leader. Now, the challenge is getting through the imposter syndrome that stops people getting there. And this is really the result of our cultural instinct to wait to be picked. You know, I've been in the classroom. It's like, you know, you put your hand up and you wait for the teacher to pick you. That kind of cultural instinct never goes away. You know, publishing or become, you know, in the music industry, for example, you all got to be wait to pick somebody to have value in that story. But the thing is now, I think that each and every one of us has an interesting story to tell. We just really haven't been given the platform and the stage. I mean, this is the great thing about podcasts, right? That, I mean, you've done how many, 30 episodes now, around about then, I think?
I think it's about 30, yeah.
Yeah, so around about 30. I mean, these are all, everybody's different. They've all got fascinating stories to tell. And I feel that only by getting on stage and sharing it and committing it to an audience and facing rejection, do you understand what you mean? What is the avatar that you project? What is the way that you touch people? You know, people reach out to you and say, yeah, Michael, I heard that story. That really touched me. Then you understand what thought leadership really is. And you don't have to, you know, be a billionaire going to the moon. You just have to have done something that moves somebody. Or, you know, you may be a few steps down the road to some guy looking out of the office window, right? But I think there's a real sense of imposter syndrome that holds us back, and it particularly affects, I'm sure you find this in your clients, an age group, which is probably the more senior execs in business.
It's so true, and I think the imposter syndrome is a big piece of it, and also that you mentioned the word rejection, and being putting yourself out there is a very public thing to do. And I know for a lot of the leaders I talk to, they don't want to be on that kind of stage. They don't want to be subject to that kind of scrutiny, because especially with social media, I mean, putting yourself out there gets you a lot of input and feedback, some of which is not kind and that you may not want. But what I was hearing you say is advice I give all the time, and I think it's really important to underscore this point, is that that box can be very small about what you, how you help, and what story, you, what parts of your story or experience connects with a certain group of people. In fact, from, you know, looking back to my branding and marketing days, that's even better if you're speaking to a smaller audience,
because
you can be really, really clear about what your thought leadership means and what your space is and who you are really there to help. Because I think that's what a lot of what people in marketing did. I think what a lot of people who are trying to position themselves as thought leaders or leaders in a specific space, they often cast to what we say here, too wide of a net. They try to be the coach or leader or thought leader or whatever for everybody. And that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
No. You're never going to be right. I'm not the right coach or trainer for everybody. And that's okay. I actually want to work with the ones who think I'm the right fit for them. I don't want to spend time trying to convince somebody that I'm the right fit. And I think that that's part of putting yourself out there, and that's a big learning, let's say, for me, I know, and for other people I've talked to, is that you want connection. This is what it's all about. And if you... if you can figure out the way to connect with the people who want to hear from you, you've already won half the battle, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I would also say what you're identifying is probably appreciated more by people who grew up, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and probably right up until the first decade of this millennium, right? Is that what you're talking about is, for you and I, Michael, like, we grew up in an era that for us, shelf space was a reality in marketing. You know, for example, if you put it in the, if you were in the music business and you were like record stores, remember those?
I do.
You went to the record store and they had a display, right? Like, that display was physically limited shelf space. So there could only be like one like album like occupying number one position. And then, you know, like this had the window display, it had to make sure that that was a really good artist that we were going to shift volume, right? So it basically meant that if you grew up in that era, all of marketing was geared around shelf space, limited. And therefore, you had to go mass, because if you didn't like deliver a mass audience, then people wouldn't touch you. There was, you know, if you were the guy that had like 50, you know, fans of your album, no record store would ever carry you. You'd be in like in that, you know, that sort of discount rack at the back. You remember those ones? You could get stuff for a dollar. You would be in there with all the students. That's as good as you could hope for, right? So it's that for us is our training. But the reality is now we live in a world without shelf space. We're actually, we've got to break out of that mindset, which basically means that, you know, when we in thought leadership and as personal brands are not politicians. You know, we don't win with 51% of the market, right? That, you know, and the politician has to be everything to everybody, right? That's how they win their game.
Right.
That, you know, they say everything that pleases everybody, but nothing, right?
Right.
That's exactly. Yeah, well, what's your opinion about this? Well, you know, and they don't actually say, right? Just answer the question. That's the world of politics and traditional marketing. It's about saying nothing and being everything. And yet today, the economics favor the guy who is like a rock star. You know, just be meaningful, being something to somebody rather than everything to everybody. So it means like going after that 5% and 10% and not being liked, but being loved. You know, like doubling down on, you know, I don't just want to focus on, for example, executives. I want to focus on, for example, I heard today talking to somebody that they don't just want to sell to C-suite as their target audience. They specifically want to sell to CFOs who are ex-alcoholics. You know, you think about that as a niche market. If you were like giving that message to somebody, it's like, yeah, I'm a CFO and ex-alcoholic. I'm listening to this guy for sure.
Right.
And that's the challenge we have. Even if you look at, for example, like at your phone, like the average person has 7 podcasts on their phone. So like that's now the real shelf space. It's like, if you want to get on there, you have to be really meaningful to that listener, because if you're not, I'm listening to the next one. So you're absolutely right. The point is you've got to focus on being meaningful and not editing and moderating yourself down, because you'll just disappear. You'll get lost in the noise.
And we'll be right back. The Leadership Communication Show is brought to you by the Comvia Group, your source for leadership communication and workplace relationships coaching and training. Visit wearecomvia, that's wearecomvia.com to learn more. If you're a senior leader in healthcare who's thinking about making the transition to the early and mid-stage life sciences world, the Comvia Group's Write the Next Chapter of Your Career program is for you. Learn more and get access to a free preview at www.wearecomvia.com/next-chapter. That's www.wearecomvia.com/next-chapter. And now back to the show. It's easy, like you said at the top of the show, it's easy to be invisible if you're not being really clear about your message and your story and your connection and that meaningfulness. So that's so important for people to remember. What mistakes do you see, Graham, that people who are trying to establish themselves as thought leaders make? Do you see anything specific we can warn our folks about if they're looking to start or continue on the thought leadership journey?
Yeah, so many. I think the biggest one, Michael, and we've probably fallen foul of this, is, you know, there's a very big cultural narrative about your why. And yes, especially in the corporate area, you talk about purpose, and I can understand all of that. We need to have that. And in many ways, that attracts people to you and attracts people to businesses. But the problem is that people see that as the beginning of the journey. And yet the reality is that, I mean, if you look at famous entrepreneurs like Steve Jobs, or, you know, you pick anybody, they didn't start with a why.
Right.
They just started and they discovered their why later on. You know, it's like, okay, I kind of like this thing. And then it joins the dots, you know, the journey kind of makes sense. And then later on with that perspective, that vantage again, you understand the why. So I would say the biggest mistake is trying to find your why before you start. I would say find your start is probably more powerful, because it's a very agile journey. I talk about agile storytelling with my clients in podcasting, and it's a bit like stand-up comedy. You know, no comedian was born funny, right? That they practice that. You can be sure that at school, you remember as a teacher, I'm sure, it's like, there was that kid, you know, he was the, you know, maybe he kind of hadn't figured it out. He was still refining his art and his delivering his craft, but you can be sure he's figured out that if he is funny, he gets good positive feedback. Right. And now he's on that journey, right? And by the, you know, maybe he doesn't go anywhere, but he may become a stand-up, right, later on in life. But the point is that you have to start, and you have to start rough and get on stage, face rejection. And too many people wait for the perfect timing to have all of that together. You know, like, we live messy lives, right? These are the best stories, and you don't have a through story that makes complete sense from day one, and that's okay. But you have to start to make sense of it and not kind of feel somehow inadequate. That, you know, not right. You look at Ted's talks, right? And everybody's kind of got this like wonderful 18-minute, like, I was doing this thing and, you know, boom, you know, the stars are in alignment.
Right.
It's not like that in reality, right? That's like a lot of hindsight. So don't let that stop you. And I think a lot of people get stopped, or they get hung up on that beginning.
They do. And that's such good advice, because, I mean, even when I think about my journey, I feel very purpose-driven. I feel like I understand my why, but I couldn't define it. I mean, I'm almost 50. It took me till I was 42 to figure that out. And
I love
that.
Yeah,
it's so true. But I wasn't afraid. And I love that you use the word messy, because you've got to start somewhere. You've got to allow the rough drafts to happen. You have to allow things to be messy. You have to be willing to work through failure. And failure, sometimes you learn from it. Sometimes it just stinks and you don't, but you have to be able to work through it and move on. And that's all part of what makes your story. So, so yeah, such good advice to everybody out there. It's, you know, if you know you want to do something, whether it's get on your thought leadership journey, start your podcast, start that blog, or launch a business or whatever, or make a career transition or whatever it is, start somewhere. Start talking about it. Start journaling about it and reflect. See, just start. And the thing that I always, that I work with clients with a lot and I do for myself is take the time to stop, disconnect and reflect because that's where you learn where your what your why is becoming.
Yeah, absolutely. It put it together, right? It's like this. I think this is reflection in a way, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is. And that's why I love these conversations. And this is my why I have a podcast is to talk to other people about their experiences and learn from them and how they made it along the way. Because everybody has a story. And to me, people's stories are so fascinating. But a lot of times they're afraid to share them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look at you. I mean, like you said, like it took until you're 42 to figure it out. I love those stories. And to be honest, let's be fair. Like you and I still figuring it out, really.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's the reality. Like we kind of got it mostly figured out, but it's still like I'm not 100% like figured out. Still got work to do. But people look at you and they think, oh, he's got it figured out. Like he's all got it worked out. You know, he's always been doing, you know, teaching, branding, marketing, podcasts, coaching, thought leadership, leadership, et cetera, it all kind of makes sense. But no, that's a lot of hindsight and, like you say, reflection. And that's a big part of it, isn't it? And creating that space. And I'd say to your audience as well, like podcasts are a great way to reflect because, yes, it's part therapy. But having like these conversations with you, Michael, is like, you know, I get to reflect on my journey through you. You know, it's kind of like, okay, I see it how you see it, and I see you as well. And there's those kind of insights you would never get by being in it. And that's really important, especially to join the dots and find your why, right? Because that's really what it is. What's the through story? How on earth does this all kind of come together as a cohesive narrative? Only through reflection.
And when it comes together, it doesn't mean that that's it. Because like you said, still work in progress and it can morph and it can change and you will build upon it and you'll leave things behind that were important to you before that are no longer and it's okay. That's one of the things that I love the fact that people talk more openly about purpose and why and I think it's terrific, but I think also it makes it seem like you've got to find it, stick to it, and that's it. And that's not the case for me, at least. I don't feel that that's the case. I feel that we need to give ourselves permission to grow and change as we move through our stories even. So how does someone get started with podcasting? Because I know for me, it was daunting when I started and a little bit scary. Number one, imposter syndrome, putting myself out there, but then all the tech that comes with it and getting on the networks and all of that. So I know I have listeners out there who are thinking about doing it. What would you suggest would be a good first step or maybe some things to think about for getting started?
Yeah, this is a good conversation because it's changed a lot, obviously, in the years. It's a lot easier now to start a podcast, which actually makes it a lot harder to promote a podcast, right?
Right.
Just basic supply and demand, right? So, you know, the challenge now is not just starting, but also knowing who you talk to. Let's think about it. Firstly, there are two options, really, for getting into podcasting. One is start a podcast. The second is be on other people's podcasts. That's a great way of experiencing it. You know, like I'm doing now, I'm on your podcast. So, you know, you have to do all the heavy lifting now. And I'm afraid I just get to sit here and talk to you. But, you know, I've been on the other side plenty of times, right? I've done, I think, over 2,000 podcast episodes. So I just love being on both sides of it. But the point is you've now got options. And the other part is, you know, imagine if you were running a radio show. If you talk to anybody in radio and I have a lot of friends who come from both public radio and commercial radio, and they would always say that the one thing that we can learn from radio as podcasters is that one thing that radio hosts never do, which podcasters do, and certainly YouTubers do, right, is say, you guys, which is really interesting because I've never thought about that. And I have a friend who worked in radio, and he said, like, when he interned in the equivalent of NPR in the UK, in Britain, he said, when he started out, he worked with this sort of grizzled old radio DJ mm-hmm. who'd been around since probably the birth of radio. But he was just loved by his audience. He knew who his audience was. And he told him, like, when he joined the radio station, he gave him this tip. And he said, like, when you start, this is what I want you to do. And he took this photo. He had this cutout photo that some listener had sent to him. And it's this woman. And he says, pin it. He taped it to the microphone. And he said, there, that's what I want you to do. And he said, well, what's that? And he said, that's your listener. Every time I go on air, I talk to her.
Mm.
I talk to you. It's never you guys. It's you. I know her. I know her name. I know what she doesn't like, what she's frustrated with, and why she listens to me. So bringing that back to what you should do, because it's so much easier to start a podcast now, the challenge now is that you start a podcast about what you want to talk about, but you don't have an audience and you give up because mm-hmm. you don't get that feedback. Mm-hmm. The challenge now is really identifying who that you is. Who is that photo that you're going to put on your microphone? Because the more you understand that, the more you can talk to her or him and know what their pain points are, the more you're going to build a successful podcast around you in that conversation. And that really has to be probably the most important thing to do now. A lot of people start podcasts and they don't consider who they're talking to. Mm. So therefore, they just become the you guys. And they kind of, once again, get lost in the noise. But the ones that really work are very specific. They're like the CFO Alcoholics podcast, right? That's really niche. But you've got to go in at that level as well and know exactly who you're talking to. Have a thought, you know, what's her age? What's her name? What's her job title? And speak to her.
Wonderful. I mean, that's the first rule of communication is know your audience. And it's amazing how we fall down and don't do that well in so much of our communications, everything from emails and texts down to the audience for a podcast. We have to remember to make it for them, not for us. It's so
101, Michael.
Yeah, it is.
We forget, right?
Why
I mean, it's
no,
it hasn't changed, right? Since advertising days, right? You know,
it has not, but it's so critical.
Ogilvy, I'm sure, would be turning it over in his grave hearing this.
Well, you know what? That's why they need communication pros like us to help with those reminders, you know, every day.
Exactly. The problems don't change, do they? I mean, it's really, you know, if you think about it, the problems are timeless as much as the solutions are timeless, like connection and storytelling. These are timeless.
Right. But in the age of acceleration and technology, the way you apply these things just continues to change, which actually for me is fun. You know, coaching people through how to communicate with hybrid teams during COVID and redoing all my workshops that were in person to virtual was actually great fun for me, you know, because it was a challenge. It was a way to apply these principles that are tried and true, like you said, in different ways. So, well, Graham, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing some of your brilliance with my listeners. Let's take a moment for you to tell everybody how they can learn more about you and your work and your company.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? I really enjoyed this chat, Michael. And the fact that you out there were listening is even better. I felt like, you know, we're sitting around the table together and having a good chat about stuff that we care about. So hopefully you are inspired to reach out to Michael as well and, you know, listen to some of his other episodes as well. I have to say I was listening through some of the previous episodes and I enjoyed the conversations as well. So thank you for all of that. If you want to know more about me, you can find out about me at my website. I go to my personal website, which is grahamdbrown.com, and I put the D in there because Graham Brown is a wallpaper company.
Ah.
And it's a very different experience. And they registered the domain very early on in the .com era. So unfortunately, you have to put my middle name in, Graham D. Brown. So if you want to know about storytelling, podcasting, and also importantly about storytelling in the era of the machine being more human. Those are my sort of conversations that matter and I care about. And hopefully if you care about them as well, you want to check them out, then feel free to reach out to me.
Awesome, Graham. Listen, I really enjoyed our conversation as well. And thank you so much for doing this today. I appreciate it. That's it for this episode of the Leadership Communications Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you think this show can help other people you know, please tell them about it too. To learn more about me and my work, head over to my websites at michaelpiperno.com and wearecomvia.com. While you're there, be sure to check out all of the leadership communication tips and tricks I share on my blogs. See you next time.